Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Hospice News Elevate podcast. I'm Holly Vossel, senior reporter for Hospice News, and I'll be guiding today's discussion around the challenges of end-of-life care delivery from the social worker perspective. Joining us this episode is Arlen Gaines, licensed clinical social worker and director of hospice social services at Jessa Hospice. Gaines is also a PhD candidate in palliative care at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Today, we'll be digging into the turnover and retention factors among hospice social workers, a core part of the interdisciplinary team. Before we begin, a quick note. Hospice News is able to produce these podcasts thanks to those in the field lending their voice. Let us know if you or others are interested in sharing your thoughts on an episode. If you would like to sponsor a podcast, send us a note at editor@hospicenews.com. Now let's begin our journey into today's topic. So without further ado, let's get going on this conversation with a warm welcome to Arlen. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Holly. It's really an honor to be here with you today.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, we're just going to be digging into that role of the hospice social worker. So Arlen, why don't you just start us off with some background about your experience and just your overall, you know, walk in the life of this role and any others that touch into it?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Holly. Well, I've really had the privilege of working in the hospice field now for over 15 years. I've been working for many years in the field as a hospice social worker and had a lot of growth over the years. I became a board certified clinical supervisor and a manager. In the last few years, I've been a director of social services with a not-for-profit hospice in Maryland. And I have the pleasure of supervising the social workers and the chaplains and the bereavement program and the volunteer groups. So it's been a wonderful career in hospice from both the perspective in the field and now in leadership.
Yeah, so you really have that insight into that end-of-life care realm. And I know you're also a PhD candidate in the palliative side, so you're getting both sides of that coin, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yes, it's been an honor. I'm in the first cohort of the fantastic PhD in palliative care program at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. So knee-deep in my research, and it really keeps me stimulated on the academic and scholarly side of things as well.
Right. So just walk us through what the average day in the life of a hospice social worker would look like.
Well, that's a great question because, like many others on the hospice interdisciplinary team, there is often no regular day. So the name of the game is often flexibility, I'd say, and collaboration. So social workers, like others on the team, typically have a number of visits planned with patients and families. As you know, we support both the patient and the family system. But inevitably, there are changes. So social workers are in close collaboration with their team, and things change. So perhaps a patient has had a change in condition, or perhaps there has been an urgent psychosocial related need, often perhaps a caregiving crisis. Maybe there's a new admission or a patient has died. So social workers often need to reroute and reschedule and really be very, very nimble. But that being said, the day does typically include a number of visits, a lot of collaboration, and of course, it's not a day in hospice without documentation.
And so there's a lot of like important pieces there. But what would you say is sort of the main role of a social worker on that hospice interdisciplinary team?
So when I'm describing hospice social work, I often share that we tend to the emotional, but also the practical aspects of the experience. So what's wonderful about social workers is they have training in assessing the person in their environment. And what I have found is that this is so congruent with our hospice work that is so patient and family centered. So we just find that social workers are really well positioned to support our patients and families just across very diverse cultural and belief systems. So social workers assess the patient and family within their environment and culture and learn and understand more about what's important to them. What is their belief system? What are their hopes or their fears? really importantly, what are their goals of care and what do they know about this situation? Or maybe there's something more they want to know. Of course, we're always assessing social determinants of health, housing, access to food, and so on, and caregiving. Sometimes there is just one visit to do this work. We often have patients who are admitted and close to dying, so there's just not a lot of time to do the work. So based on what we assess with both the patient and the family system, we can intervene in a number of ways. We're finding out, of course, how the family is communicating, who's in the family, who are the decision makers. And based on what we're learning, we create an individualized plan of care. So social workers are experts in communication. So they often will take the lead in conversations related to goals of care. Just really understanding within the family system, are these aligned or not aligned? There's often some really complex conversations there. And social workers have clinical training and they do a tremendous amount of anticipatory grief counseling, since, of course, we know grief happens long before patients are admitted typically, and a lot of education, of course, about the dying process. I would say also there are just a number of practical things that will come to them across their day. So they're going to be looking at Pulsed or Most forms. In Maryland, we have the Most form, really thinking through caregiving options, funeral planning, respite, home-delivered meals, so many different things. And as they're doing all this, they're really, really thinking about this whole family system. And so that might include a longtime caregiver, someone who's been with the family for many, many years. And social workers like to think about how are we supporting that whole system? So lots and lots of things on a social worker's plate. And they really are nimble again and assess and intervene accordingly, according to what's most important to that patient and family.
There's a lot on the radar.
Yes.
It sounds like, yeah.
A lot.
And it's a lot of skills to put into one person from just listening to you, kind of just.
Yeah. It really is, because, you know, the social workers are clinically trained. So they're bringing tenets of trauma-informed care. And actually, Holly, I appreciate the reporting that you've done along those lines. And they're bringing, you know, tenets of meaning-centered psychotherapies or dignity therapy to the work they do. So they really, really bring a clinical eye to this end-of-life time and just kind of see what's in their tool belt that they need to bring out. Often, you know, when we walk into a home, we think we might know what to expect, but it's often quite different.
It's different. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you say are some of the largest challenges that social workers face?
This is a great question. So I anticipated I might have a question like this. So I was meeting with our fantastic social work group that we have at Jessa Hospice, because I wanted to ask them directly some of the challenges they're facing right now in this moment, so I could really, you know, represent that perspective from the field. And really, one of the number one challenges that our social workers are feeling is what we call the churn. We often have patients right now who come on service with a very short length of stay. They die very quickly with very high acuity care needs. And there's just not a lot of time to do the work. And those quick ins and outs can really take a toll on the team. It's a lot. It's really, really hard and can contribute to burnout. I also hear and also, you know, have experienced this myself, that of all the roles on the hospice team, it sometimes feels like hospice social work is most misunderstood. So social workers often are really working in that space of navigating boundaries of their role and expectations. You know, so for instance, they're able to provide anticipatory grief and end-of-life counseling, yet they're not a therapist. Or they can help, you know, make sure someone's getting home-delivered meals or connect with community resources, yet they're not a community social worker who can tend to all the needs all the time. So there's just a lot of education and sort of expectation setting and working with the family to make sure we're meeting their needs in a way that, you know, kind of works within the system of hospice. So that's definitely a challenge. I also, just from experience, just see some larger challenges just around, you know, feeling like, are we meeting the needs of diverse communities? So for social workers, along with others on the team, it can be a challenge. if they're on a visit and maybe they're not speaking the same language of the family that we're serving. Mm-hmm. And if there's not an interpreter present, the language line is just not the same. It just doesn't provide that nuance needed in some sensitive conversations. So I think there's definitely challenges in thinking about how can we truly have a very culturally sensitive and inclusive approach to our work. So that's kind of some of the things I've been thinking of. I think in addition, we can't have the word challenge without the word documentation. The reality of the work is that there's quite a burden of documentation. We want to make sure all our work is aligned with the conditions of participation in Medicare. And there's a lot of, I's to dot and T's to cross. And sometimes it can just feel like there's just not enough time. So it takes a really unique skill set to be a successful hospice social worker. You have all these clinical skills and knowing about community resources, but also needing to be really highly organized and really good with time management. So it can sometimes be a challenge.
Yeah. And I just want to appreciate that note of like having all those hats that a social worker sort of wears, even the advanced directives and having that insight around advanced care planning too. And
yes,
what the caregiver resources might be with the social, like you mentioned, all those social determinants of health, and your mind has to kind of put those things into the buckets that they need to go into. And then also, like you said, make sure that you are in compliance with what hospice is and providing that, quality care that meets those needs and addresses them. So how can all of those challenges impact the ability of social workers to sustain and hold their roles?
It's a great question and something we think about every day, because this is really hard work. Because even in addition to everything I've shared, there are ethical challenges that come up. We're mandated reporters. So we are sometimes in really uncomfortable situations where we're having to, deal with situations related to abuse or neglect. This work can take a toll. And I do think compassion fatigue is real. The pace of the work is real. If there are staffing shortages, of course, that might mean that there are higher caseloads, which just really compounds it all. So I do think that having space for social workers to be able to share some of their experiences, embedding peer support on the team can really help. But it's, I think like the rest of the team, it is hard work. And it's just so, so important that we stay connected to the why and the mission of why we do this work and why we came into this work.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you touched on the workforce shortages, because that is a clinical and non-clinical roles, like every aspect of that hospice care delivery and other healthcare providers are experiencing those shortages. And, the pandemic certainly exasperated that. And while a lot of providers are reporting improvement, that doesn't mean that doesn't have lasting impacts. So from what I'm hearing, so what are some of the effects of hospice social worker shortages in particular when it comes to that quality and care access pieces?
Well, with any shortage means that there are higher caseloads. So we've been very fortunate in our hospice that we've been able to manage this okay. But I certainly hear stories from colleagues elsewhere, and it is real that there are shortages and sometimes very high caseloads, which invariably will impact the quality of care. Social workers want to be there. As a trained social worker, we want to do the work. We want to be with people when they need us. And it certainly could be hard if they are pulled in other directions. So we really do need to focus on workforce shortages, making sure there is pay equity across the team, and making sure that there is good organizational and cultural support within the organization for social work.
Yeah, I think that some of the other things that I've heard are that it's really important, like you mentioned, they're dealing with a lot of, like any other hospice worker, like dealing with these stresses of end-of-life care. And like you said, the compassion fatigue is a factor. So that mental health support is another thing that I've heard providers say is an important piece of that retention. among this and others. Yeah.
Absolutely. I really think that ensuring that the culture of the organization just reflects that mission and heart of hospice work goes a long way toward really avoiding workforce shortages to retaining staff. So I know it's something certainly in my role now as a director of social services that I think a lot about, you know, having been in the field for many years and, you know, feeling the stress. So I can just speak for myself that I really work hard at fostering some opportunities for peer support among the social workers on my team, and really thinking about professional growth that really motivates anyone, including myself. Here I am, you know, working on my PhD. that we really want to feel like we're growing and developing and having good clinical supervision. So I think really, really taking care of our staff and hearing about their goals, hearing about what's important to them, and thinking about as leadership, how can we support them in that? And I think that really does help retain staff, and we can learn from each other. I love learning from my team, hearing if they've gone to an interesting training, you know, bring it back, tell us what you learned, you know, present on that because we want to hear it.
Right. And just having that peer-based support is a factor too that I've heard as being an important part of like, well, these are other, you know, professionals in my role going through this. How did they manage it? How do they approach it? Maybe that I can find some help there in ways that, you know, that they themselves can manage those same experiences. So what do you think, given all that sort of pieces of the challenges and ways to address them, what do you think are some of the biggest reasons why a hospice social worker might choose to stay or leave an organization or the field altogether?
Yeah, you know, another great question, Holly. And I think in addition to what I've shared in terms of thinking about the culture of the organization, I think especially for social workers who in some places, in some cases, may feel a little bit disenfranchised on a team, making sure that they have a voice on the team, that they feel heard. Their voice is really, really important. So certainly I know in my groups, I really think about having they will lead certain discussions. They have very strong voices in the interdisciplinary team meetings. So I think that is really critical. I think it is critical that social workers, along with the rest of the team, can take their time off. And when they are off, that they can turn their phone off and shut their computer down and really have a chance to recharge. It's just absolutely critical. I think, as I mentioned briefly before, I think retention has a lot to do with growth and feeling like there are growth opportunities. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you are changing your position per se, although that's always wonderful if someone moves into maybe a management position, but staying in touch with evidence-based practice, having opportunities for interprofessional education, you know, attending dynamic trainings, or maybe even presenting. So I just think kind of keeping those juices flowing is really, really critical because the day in and day out of the work is tough, yet so rewarding. So I think just really creating those spaces to stay in touch with the work, the mission of what we do, having opportunities for growth, I think it goes a long way toward retention. And I think when those pieces are not present, it can impact maybe folks who want to leave.
Right. They don't have that organizational culture. And you said the equitable pay, the
yes,
the time for that documentation, the technology. Those are some of the keys to retention that I've heard in similar, you know, in other roles in hospice too. But when it comes to social workers in particular, you mentioned some of these keys to retention and recruiting. That's less, I think, what we talked about so far. So what do you sort of think are those really key pieces to recruitment, since we've kind of covered the retention factors?
Yeah, recruitment is always a challenge. And we sometimes get very creative with recruitment. But I, as I've sort of settled more into a leadership position, I am so happy to give opportunities more and more to social workers who have come to us without hospice experience, because they're often very, very motivated. And we just need to make sure we have very strong training and precepting and all of that in place. But sometimes some of our newer social workers are really highly motivated. So I think giving opportunities to newer clinicians, you know, someone, every clinician has to start somewhere. So we're very proud if some clinicians choose hospice as a place to start. But recruitment is always a challenge. We work very closely with our HR team on that. but definitely an ongoing challenge for sure.
Right. I'm just making sure they understand what the role, if they're new to hospice, what it means and what that nature of that work is, sort of
exactly.
Like, yeah. Being aware of what you're getting yourself into, so to speak.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
So how do these retention and recruitment factors around hospice social workers, sort of those priorities among that workforce, how do they compare to other interdisciplinary professionals? Are there differences, similarities there?
I would, you know, just speaking from my own perspective, I think it's really similar. I think, you know, many of the challenges that social workers face on the team are spiritual care providers may be facing, or our nurses may be facing. With hospice comes compliance, and there's just a lot to this role. So it's sort of, as we talked about before, so many pieces that have to somehow mesh together. And we want people to have a life outside of work too. So some of my colleagues may be listening to this and laughing as they hear that, but we really want to encourage that. So I do think there are similarities, although I do think historically social workers sometimes are not as heard and valued. I am always glad to think about ways that we can elevate the social work voice and have the social work voice recognized. Social workers are truly it's really an unbelievable field that's so adaptable between the clinical training, knowledge of resources, communication skills. So I see some beautiful partnerships, you know, with nurses and social workers and chaplains where they come together. I think all the disciplines on the team face some similar challenges, but social workers, I know, in some places may not have their voice feel as heard.
Right. So that work-life balance and that collaboration, and that's really important pieces. Mm-hmm. Can you think of any other final thoughts on some of those important retention factors and just supporting these hospice social workers?
I just think again and again, it comes back to organizational culture and fostering that sense of connectedness, that sense of mission and heart, and making sure that we are never losing touch with that as we do this work. Fostering interprofessional collaboration is key. Part of why I have not gone into private practice all these years is because I love my team. I love, love, love working with nurses and doctors and hospice aides and volunteers and chaplains. I mean, we just learn so much from each other. So really leveraging that strength of the teamwork, which is so beautiful in hospice care when it goes well, it can just go a long way.
For the patients and the families.
Families and the team.
Yeah, and the team as well. Clinical and patient satisfaction, that's where we are. We talk about important parts. Exactly. Well, thank you, Arlen. That was my last question that we have time for in this episode. But thank you so much for joining in the conversation today.
Thanks again so much for having me, Holly. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that wraps up this Elevate podcast. This is Holly Vossel, Senior Reporter for Hospice News, a vertical of Aging Media Network, which is a WTWH media company. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more episodes. Take care for now.